It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And you sound like you're a little bit hoarse today, as Angela pointed out, but just a little deeper than usual.
Yeah, I think I've just got some allergies. It's nothing.
If you don't have them, you'd be in the very few I've talked to lately. It's really been a bad, bad month or so for that. But as long as everybody's feeling good and we're here, we might as well, do a radio show or something like that. We got a lot going on. Seems like I say that every week, and seems like I'm right every week about that. There's just a lot going on. And we'll get down to the nitty-gritty before long. But first, I want to welcome everybody, all the regulars. Thanks for always being here. You know, you're the backbone of the show. You're why we do it. If you're new to the show, either on purpose or by accident, try to listen in for the whole hour. Not that the regulars shouldn't listen the whole hour, but we'll get to enough stuff that almost everybody will pick up something that should be helpful, and you'll learn something one way or the other if we can help it. And we'll do that by talking about all the fun things that we like to talk about, unless and until you pick up the phone and call 904-222-8255 and tell us what you'd like to talk about, and we will do exactly that. We'll put you right up to the front of the line. So if you want to get your questions answered, or just want to change the subject or do observations or whatever it is, we are here and always excited to talk to the people. So delving right into this week, I was having a marvelous, fun walk through the park week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then something happened, and darn it, momentum just can't get quite sustained lately, it seems. All news goes from one side to the other, and I can't think of a description that goes any different than we're just range trading, directionless, wandering around in circles, range trading.
It was definitely the tale of two halves of the week. We saw the first part of the week, we saw the market do nothing but go up, and it was great. We saw two modest up days, and then Powell spoke, and I have to give credit where it's due. I kind of ripped him a new one a couple weeks ago on the show. I didn't like the way he handled his last press conference. I thought it was actually very poor. But this time he did quite a good job, I thought.
And he was tutored.
Maybe. Or just learned from his mistake. He took a 75 basis point rate hike off the table. And the market reacted very positively to that on Wednesday with a 900 plus point up day. And that put us on track for a really good week. But then you realized what always happens when the Feds speak. And there's a big up day and a big down day. And not always in that order.
Nope.
But you know it's coming. And this time did not. It was not different this time, as usual. The Thursday, the market gave back all of its Wednesday gains and then a little bit more. And then Friday, we saw another modest decline in which the intraday lows were much more than modest, actually. But we saw some pretty strong buying into the close. It erased the major losses. And that was a pretty good sign, actually. I did like that we saw the market sort of rebound a bit on Friday afternoon.
We needed that late rally.
We did, and it just showed that we are somewhat range trading, although the market is, I mean, if you look at the technicals, we are sliding, making some lower lows. That's never a good sign. And we just need that sort of catalyst to break us out of this range, and I don't know what that'll be. But I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a bit. I want to talk about economic data first. There was a bunch of it this week, and while it wasn't terrible, it wasn't great either. What we are seeing are signs of an economy with a growth rate that's slowing, but not one that's coming to a crashing halt either. So it's under the circumstances, it's probably what you could have predicted would happen after the crazy growth rates of the last couple of years post-pandemic. But those weren't sustainable or realistic or even real because we put our own economy in a coma.
Yeah.
And so that's inevitable what would happen. And so now we're seeing those crazy growth rates slow down, which is probably a good thing. And it's showing up in a bunch of different places. Let's talk about jobs first. On Wednesday, we saw the ADP payrolls report come out, and it was under expectations at 247,000 new jobs. It's a fairly large miss with the expectation for 383, but honestly, that report misses up and down by that amount fairly regularly, so they never get that prediction just right, or very rarely. So whatever, that was okay. It was just the tip of the iceberg for jobs data this week, though. We also had the JOLTS report released. It showed that we have an all-time high 11.5 million job openings right now. 6.7 million people got hired last month, while 6.3 million separated from their existing job. Of those separations, 4.5 million were quits, which was also a record.
Mm-hmm.
You may think that that's a bad thing, but it's really not. When people quit their job, it's usually because they have a better job lined up. So that is actually a very strong sign in the labor market. You want to see a high quit rates.
I think maybe it's pretty obvious employers are not keeping up with wages. You can tell that by the 3% gap between the wage increases and inflation. So if your employer won't bump you up to at least break even, what you going to do?
Quit. Go find a better job.
Get a job.
It's happening. And it's happening at a rate that we've never seen before. So that is so clearly the job market is strong. We also saw initial jobless claims come in at 184K. That's really strong number. It was a bit above expectations, but really when you're down in those types of numbers, it doesn't really matter. Friday, we got the non-farm payrolls report, and it looked pretty strong on the surface. The headline number was plus 428,000 jobs created, with a downward revision to the previous month of negative 39. So it was a net gain of 389,000 jobs. The unemployment rate remained at 3.6%. Average hourly earnings were up 0.3% in April and are up 5.5%, as you just mentioned, mm-hmm. versus a year ago. Payrolls are still about 1.2 million jobs short of where they were pre-COVID, but the total number of hours worked was at a record high. So people who are working more and they're making more money than they did pre-COVID. All of that is good news, but there was some bad news under the surface in this report. Small business employment fell by 353,000 people or jobs, and 363,000 people dropped out of the workforce, lowering the labor force participation rate to 62.2.
It's been the toughest hurdle for this whole job market.
It really is. It doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
There's still people exiting the workforce who are of working age who are somehow managing to survive without money.
There are 5 or 6 million of those people out there that just didn't come back.
Yeah, it's not something I can explain. It's very strange.
Now, some people are leaving the workforce because they're turning whatever age and they're retiring.
But that's a constant.
It's just normal replacement.
Yeah, and then people are entering the workforce who graduate high school and or college and get jobs.
Yeah.
So that's just normal. I just really can't explain why people are exiting, and I don't know where they're going, and I don't know what they're doing to survive, because all of the pandemic unemployment benefits are gone. You just have the normal amount of unemployment, which is not enough to sustain any kind of lifestyle. So I'm not sure.
No, I'm a little perplexed on that one, too. Now, if you go to the household survey for BLS and see that the number of jobs actually decreased by 353,000, that would add to confusion, except if you go back another month, and I don't have time to explain that in the few seconds before the break, but don't go anywhere and you'll hear all about it in just a few seconds. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are finishing up on the market wrap, but first, we have a trivia question, who, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Let's talk about home sales and inflation and that kind of thing for a minute. In March of 2021, 34% of new home sales were under $300,000. 1 year later, March of 2022, what's that same percentage? In other words, what percentage of homes sold under $300,000? A year ago, 34%. This year, I won't even tell you if it's up or down. How about that?
All right.
Somebody's got to bracket this thing for us. So lines are open, 904-222-8255. All right, wrapping up, Adam and I are, like everybody else, I think, more or less confused about where this economy is really going.
Yeah, I think that's there are so many signs pointing in opposite directions, mm-hmm. and you could very easily paint a clear picture that we are fine, and you can very easily paint a clear picture that we might be in trouble, and it really depends on what narrative you want to stick with. I think it's very. The indicators are almost contrarian at this point, mm-hmm. or pointing opposite directions. It's I don't know. It's tough.
There is only one completely indisputable fact in this economy right now, and that is that all of this stuff is brought to you by stupid policy by this administration.
I don't want to say that it's 100% caused by that. I like to say that they are not doing anything to help any of the problem.
No, triggered it and they exacerbate it. Yeah. Well, and they do not fix
it. I think
it.
A lot of this is caused by COVID. And you can't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's indisputable that a lot of this is caused by COVID. But then a lot more is caused by the response to COVID. And then a lot more is piled on by the fact that they're just not doing anything to help us out. It's as if they don't have the best interest of the country and the people in their head.
I got lots of time left, and you got lots of time left, and they got lots of time left to save the planet. We do not need to save the planet
today. Today, agreed.
Let's start getting some, shall we say, sense into the policy of the energy for starters. Good morning, caller. I don't have a name. I apologize. So, who's calling?
Good morning, Guru Financials. The Van Wees, this is Phil from Orange Park. I caught the end of your question on the percentage, but could you repeat that? Number one,
absolutely.
Thank you for all the good you do.
Oh, thank you.
And you guys are the best of the best, and I would like to see you run the Feds, the Justice, the Federal Reserve, and all that. And, you know, we might get in a better – I think you bring us in 3 years up 30% for the local people and everybody else that are over the hill gang. Can you repeat that question?
Sure.
Because I caught the end of it.
First off, I'll tell you one thing. I'll take the Fed job under one condition. My number one goal would be
you got it. You got it. Not a problem.
I'd want to work my way out of a job by closing the Fed within 3 years. That is my opinion.
I think you can do it in 2.5, believe me.
I could do it overnight if I had my way.
What a waste of time
like-minded people
and
here.
Manpower. Yes, sir.
All right. Anyway, home sales, 34%. In March of 2021, 34% of new home sales were under 300,000. In March of 2022, what is that same percentage? Higher, lower, I don't know.
55%.
That is too high.
Okay.
But I'm happy.
I have about – go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just happy we got a bracket now. We have a high limit. We
didn't
have one.
Reason being – there's a section in Orange Park that I favor because I own some homes. And these homes were built, long story short, these homes were built in the 60s and 70s for $15,000. 3 years ago, they were worth about $190,000. They're selling for $290,000, $270,000. I wouldn't give them $111,000 for it. They're 1,034 square feet. But people are coming from everywhere to buy these homes. Nice couples, some are military, some are younger, some are older, but... I said, what did that sell across the street from you, Frank? He says, you're going to fall off your rocker. I said, what? I says, 250, 260. He says, 290. And if they would have waited a while, they would have got the 300. It's a simple house. Three bedroom, two bath, two-car garage, nothing fancy, small lot, you know? Crazy.
The irrefutable supply and demand equation.
If you're going to take the Federal Reserve, your brother there, what is he interested in? Hey, can you run the Justice Department for us? Maybe
that would be
you
nice.
We'll give you a $3 million a year each year for 3 years to kind of, I don't know. You know, remember in the 50s and 60s and 70s, the Justice Department and the feds, they were quiet. They were real quiet.
Yep.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. Hey, absolutely right.
I don't want to take up your other caller's time, but
we appreciate it.
We all appreciate everything you do, and you know, like your the show before with Angela and Howard, y'all are from the heart and soul, and I mean that politely, with respect, but your financial knowledge is just amazing.
Well,
I listen, even if I'm in a hospital bed, which I'm not today, thank God.
Well, you sound good.
But y'all are outstanding, and you have no idea the following you have.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And
take care.
So
enjoy this.
Gets a raise, especially the guy that answered the phone. He was, like, professional, on the mark,
guy.
And real quick. And I wanted to say I was a nobody calling. Nobody calling to throw you off, but he didn't put my name in his head.
Yeah, be careful. Hey. It'll go straight to his head.
And if mom's alive or not, mine isn't. Tomorrow's that special day.
That is indeed.
That it is, yep.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Enjoy the weekend. Yeah, I should probably take a quick time out here for saying Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, like the mother of my three children and the mothers of my four grandchildren.
Yeah, Happy Mother's Day to all.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of special, something that doesn't get maybe all that much attention on a day-to-day basis, but once in a while it's nice to say thanks, Mom, for all that. No. Gee, without my mother, I wouldn't be here.
That's true.
Yeah, and yeah. She is no longer with us, unfortunately, but that's, no, we did pretty well. I was in my 60s. I still had a live mother.
And yeah.
I think that is really fortunate.
Definitely.
You've held on pretty well. All right, you want to wrap up any more on this whole economic uncertainty and all that?
Yeah, I wanted to give at least one bright spot, and there is one one really bright spot.
Yeah, good.
Bearish sentiment. Although it declined slightly this week to 52.9%, it's still off the charts high.
Yep.
Bullish sentiment increased to 26.9, up from 16.4. It was a huge jump up, and I think...
Which you could not explain easily, maybe.
I don't know the timing of when they really do that survey,
yeah,
but if it was on Wednesday or prior, that would be why.
Uh-huh.
After Thursday and Friday, I wouldn't be surprised if those numbers crater again next week. And the overwhelmingly negative sentiment towards the stock market right now is actually a really bullish indicator. If you look at historically, when the readings are this bad, like in March 2009, that was the last time they were this bad, that was the month that the stock market turned around after the Great Recession.
Yep.
And forward returns after times like these are the strongest of all time periods. So it's... Ironically, it's times like these when no one can find a positive thing to say about the market or the economy that sometimes the market does the best. So we'll see if that's true.
Who said something like that in the past? Could it be that guy, you know, what's his name? He's been known to make money in the market. Buffett?
Yeah, that Warren guy. He'd buy when there's blood
when
in the streets.
When there's blood in the streets.
Yep.
I like to buy.
It's...
Yep.
It's
and
so true.
Then he has a sort of corollary to that one, too, that goes, wait, hey, Warren, when do you sell? He says, sell? We don't sell.
Well, he does
sometimes. Once in a while.
Yeah, he sold out of airline stocks, which turned out to be a bad
he
move.
He blew that one badly. Yeah. And look how much it punished Berkshire Hathaway. Oh, wait. No,
yeah,
it didn't.
No, it really didn't. But
I think what happened there was, even though on its face, in prima facie, the selling of the airlines did not appear to be a good idea, but that money went somewhere, and that somewhere worked out really well.
Yeah, I was having that conversation with a client this week. It's opportunity cost. So if you are holding something and it's going down and you're waiting for it to turn around, but you think something else might do better going forward, it's actually costing you money to stay. Even if the one does turn around, if the other one outperforms it, you've cost yourself money just in the lost opportunity cost. So
it's sometimes though it's hard to look in the mirror and say,
really hard
you
to
really
take the loss.
Blew this one. You got to sell it.
It is.
No, I know I'm right. I'll just hang on forever. Please go ahead.
Oh no, I had another bit of good news. Despite everything, earnings and revenue beat rates are still above 70% for this quarter.
Unbelievable.
You wouldn't know it by watching the
market. And guidance rates more improving than
it's
declining.
Less than last quarter.
Yep, which still high.
Again, last quarter was like off the charts good. So, but it's still a really strong number. So it just makes it difficult to paint to decide which picture is the right picture.
Yeah, but what I was just going to comment on is I've had a discussion, I guess, for the 20-odd years I've been in this business now that says if you buy an individual stock, that number is locked in your brain. And if it goes down, you look at the price of the stock today and you look at what you paid for it, and you're not going to want to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much you know deep down inside that you shouldn't be holding this, you won't do it. But you buy a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund that holds that, but it also holds all the others, and you look at it and say, well, this is not a good asset class to be holding right now. So you just sell it like that, and nobody has this hang-up. I don't know what I paid for that ETF, do you?
No.
That's just something that dictates a little of how we do business. Anyway, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody that, A, lines are open. Call 904-222-8255. And also, we have a trivia question still open. It's about housing, and we're going to actually have a little discussion about a related topic here just in a minute. In March of 2021, 34% of new home sales were under $300,000. What was that same percentage, or what was the percentage of the same sale, meaning under $300,000, in March of 2022, just one small year later, and it has changed quite a bit. And we know that 55% is too high, so anybody that wants to take a shot, you can narrow down the bracket a little bit. And speaking of housing and speaking of $300,000 and stuff like that, it relates to something or other.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the effect of interest rates on mortgages, and not on demand, because historically a 5.5% rate is still fairly low for houses.
We used to think, man, we'd have it made if we could get that.
Yeah, that would be that. And there's been times in my adult life when that was a great mm-hmm. rate. So it's not unusual to see mortgage rates. And if you really think about it, if you're going to borrow money from someone for 30 years, would you take the deal? I'll give you 3%.
You're looking over at 8.5 inflation right now, which we know is understated. And you think, well, that could come way down. But what happens when you're coming off of a high inflation rate? The price levels are going up. So even a smaller number is a big number. You got a few years on a 5.5 and somebody's going to have bought that mortgage because somebody's going to want to have gotten rid of it.
Yeah, it's 5.5 is still not a high interest rate when you think about the risk of loaning someone money for 30 years. So I don't think it's a bad thing that we've gotten back to that level, but it does hit homeowners in the pocketbook. And I have a good example for that. If you take out a $300,000 30-year mortgage at 3% and your payment comes out to $1,265 a month. That's principal and interest. So $1,265. If you take out that same mortgage, $300,000, 30-year fixed at 5.5%, your payment is now $1,703. That's an increase of $438 per month, or 35%.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a huge jump. And that just happened in the last 6 months, roughly, that interest rates rose that much. So if you are getting a mortgage today versus a year ago, it really is a whole different ballgame on what you can afford. So we are going to see changes in the market. I won't predict what those are because it's really hard to say, but it's a whole different ballgame today than it was just a year ago.
And real estate is local. We've known that for many years. There could be totally huge swings or differences in the market between here and other parts of Florida or other states, other up north or out west, whatever could be totally different. I mean, look at California. Never bears any resemblance to what happens around here.
No, but it's definitely something that you need to budget for. If you're wondering why rents are going up, look no further than that number.
Absolutely true. Good morning, caller. Again, I do not have a name. I apologize. So could you start with a name?
This is Leroy.
Hey, Leroy, how are you?
Just great. Hey, I got a question on required distributions.
Yeah.
You said earlier, some days earlier, maybe a couple months earlier, they were talking about bringing it up so where you're at age, 1950?
Yes. It's my anybody born after June 30th, 1949.
Right. So has anything else shook out on that? Or
why, it's funny you should mention that. It's almost like a setup, isn't it? It's not, trust me. I have at my fingertips somewhere the update on Secure 2.0. Here it is. All right, now this is brand new. This was just put out May 3rd. So what Lever's talking about is the follow-up or the technical correction to the law that was passed during COVID called Secure. It's making our called technically Secure in a Strong Retirement Act, known as Secure 1.0. What that did was it got rid of that stupid old number. It's probably the bane of financial planners everywhere, where you had to start taking required minimum distributions from retirement accounts when you turned 70 and a half. Nobody does business on 70 and a half. Where it came from, someplace the sun wasn't shining that day, I'm sure, but anyway, we had had to live with it for a long, long time. They raised it to an even 72. So the old 70 and a half thing is gone. Now, for those of us born after June 30th, 1949, what that meant was instead of having to start last year, we have to start this year because we'll turn 72 this year. Well, not so fast, perhaps, because in the proposal, the bill that's known as Secure 2.0, there is a provision where they wanted to change it even higher by a jump, but the compromise said, okay, we'll add one year, another year in 5 years, and another one in 10 years. So what it would do is to take those of us who in the affected group, and instead of having to start this year, it would postpone it till next year. And for those not familiar with the RMD, that's technically not even right in that you don't have to take it until the next year by March 31. But next year will be the first affected year when we're 73, should this pass. All right, it went through the House in March, and there is a corresponding Senate version now being reviewed and marked up by subcommittees. The interesting thing about this is that it has such bipartisan support, it's almost unheard of in Washington, D.C. to have something this popular. It went through the House, I think, on 404 mm-hmm. votes, and you just don't see things like that. And there's a lot of reasons for it on both sides, and it actually falls in line with sanity, which is why I don't understand it exactly, that how Washington could look at this and say it's a good thing. But for once, they're on our side. And it's some of the wackos people up there, too. But some of it has to do with annuity reform. Yeah, there are a lot of Democrats. I find this a little odd. But there's an awful lot of Democrats that are not big fans of annuities. Now, I always thought that it was more of a Republican thing, because I'm not a real big fan of annuities. But on the other hand, for what they're good for, they're the only thing that'll do it. So, of course, we like them. But because of that, there is a big provision in part of this. This is a potential stumbling block because it's going to be some kind of rather aggressive reform on annuity laws as pertaining to retirement accounts. What it'll be, I don't know. Now, half of me looks at that and says, well, we could screw this up big time because of that. There's going to be so much arguing on the annuity side of it. But when you look at the support from both sides, I don't think anybody is going to be in the mood to allow this not to pass. Because if it doesn't go through this legislative session, it starts over. And I don't think they want to start pounding this out next year from scratch when there's been so much work done to it. So the current thinking on the Hill right now is they're going to stick it in the big omnibus spending bill when Congress resumes from its fall recess. That, incidentally, is exactly how Secure 1.0 passed. So there's even precedent for that. That's why I'm an optimist. So that's where we stand today. I don't know how many people it affects, and of course it's been a thing of mine because it affects me, let's face it. Makes it more important in my mind. Anyway, that's where we are. So,
okay, great. Well,
you might get a 1-year reprieve on your RMD.
So, this might. Yeah, 80% of people take more than their RMD anyway, so it doesn't impact them. But others do not, and it will impact all of them, or at least the ones that don't want to take it.
Let me go to 21% on your question.
Ooh, 21%. It's still too high, but you really slashed the bracket down.
Well, help somebody.
Everybody out there is listening. Leroy just did you a favor.
All right. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. Thank Enjoy you. It. All right. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I got a few more things. I'm going to talk a little bit about an old friend that revisited the world this particular week. And some things to do with your tax returns and all that. We're sort of over the tax thing, but we're not. If you don't have your money back, you're not over it yet, that's for sure. So don't miss this one. It's going to be kind of fun. We'll pay some bills, take a little break, be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the question is still out there. In March of 2021, 34% of new home sales were under $300,000. What was that percentage in March of 2022? And we now know that 21% is too high. That's a pretty small bracket, getting into guessable territory there, people. So just pick up the phone. You never know. Maybe get lucky. Anyway, return of an old friend. Those of you who've been around a while in the investing world, remember an incident that called the flash crash. It happened back in, ironically, in May of 2010, when all of a sudden, if you were watching the market, it started to not just fall, it started to plummet. And we're talking hundreds of points in seconds. And then it turned into thousands and down, 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 down. It was going thousands of points lower. And then all of a sudden it hesitated and it started to come up about as fast as it went down. And it was sort of a mesmerizing thing if you're into the market. It just does not ever happen. So the forensics on it came up to the conclusion that some trader, I think in Chicago, made an error in a trade place, an error of magnitude such that the computers in the market just started selling everything in sight, basically. It was not real, but it happened. And Adam said apparently a lot of the people that lost a lot of their money during that thing, that got those trades canceled because it wasn't done on an open market basis, I guess.
It was artificially down. And so, a lot of trades, I remember that a lot of trades got canceled during that time period.
Yeah, I'm sure there were people who disagree with it being called a non-entity, because for some people, I'm sure it was. But for most of us, it's just something that was so memorable because we'd never seen it before. Well, guess what? May 3rd, 2022, over on the European exchanges, they had their own little flash crash. And guess what caused this? Some trader sticking in an order that was incorrect, and all of a sudden, bang, down it goes. And then same thing, up it comes. I don't know how to prevent these things, but that shouldn't happen. There ought to be some way to, I don't know if you can eliminate human error, but at least call it on the carpet when it happens. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting that it happened, and it's the month of May again. Something about trade people in the month of May, maybe they got allergies or something. Who knows?
Do you know what the least affordable city in the U.S. to live in if you're a renter right now is?
A renter? Washington, D.C.?
No. Miami.
That makes sense, actually.
Well, there's a good reason for it.
Rents are so damn high.
Well, rents are high. That is one of the reasons. But the problem is Florida has always been a relatively low cost of living state. Mm-hmm. But recently we've got an influx of remote tech workers who are flocking here from high cost states. Uh-huh. So specifically New York. And they tend to go to Miami. and they tend to find the rents there very affordable. And so there's so many
it's
of
all
them
perspective,
competing
isn't it?
For these high-end apartments. It's driven prices up. Miami's median monthly rent is currently $2,930. Unfortunately, that calls for 60% of a tenant's typical income.
Ooh.
But these people don't care because they're making New York wages.
Yeah.
To them, it's nothing.
And they can sit there on the 22nd floor of their high rise overlooking the ocean and the beach thinking, man, I'm getting all this for under $3,000.
Exactly. But it's really hurting locals. So the obvious or the thing that is probably going to happen is that wages in Miami are going to start to rise faster than the national average and sort of compensate for that. And that's inflationary. And so that's it's not a great thing for everyone. But there's just it's unavoidable at this point. The shift of people around the country during COVID has really caused some interesting and problematic situations.
Yeah, it's not a normal flow where markets adjust slowly over time because there's nothing slow about the transition that's happening. And a lot of that, you can thank COVID for that, too.
Yeah, and just for comparison, Tampa and Orlando require 45 and 37% of the average tenant's monthly income. So much more affordable, not necessarily affordable, but much more affordable than Miami now.
We were all raised saying you don't go above 35%. That's the absolute rational number to pay in rent.
Yeah, the exceptions to that would be if you live in San Francisco or New York where you don't need a car. And so you probably have a little bit more of your disposable income that could be spent on rent instead of other things.
Yeah, rents in New York, which had plummeted during COVID, are now rising really fast.
Yeah, it didn't last long.
Nope. Although there's still some open things, but I think a lot of those, I think the residentials are probably doing better than the business offices, because the offices aren't bringing people back to work quite as fast as they would sometimes like to.
And even when they try to recently, the employees revolt.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I can get a better deal from someone else at higher money. Yeah, the problem with inflation is it feeds on itself. The thing that causes it is also the thing that is produced by it, which then in turn causes it some more, which is why it's so hard to get on top of it. That's what people are complaining about the Fed about right at the moment. And if you look back, those of us of a certain age, into the 70s and the Carter era and the handoff to Reagan, what Paul Volcker did would be considered suicide today, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It would be at least political suicide. He ramped up those rates in up to 2021, whatever the – I can't remember the exact top prime was. But the thinking – and this has been reiterated by Larry Kudlow recently – the thinking is you have to get the interest rate above the rate of inflation because that's the only thing that will push it back down.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it feeds on itself. So this goes up a little bit. Then that goes up a little bit, and this goes up a little more, and that goes up a little more, and he's not doing enough to fix it.
They call it the wage price spiral.
It's true, and I alternate between getting angry at Powell and feeling sorry for him.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I like I said, I complimented him today, and I ripped him 2 weeks ago. So.
Yeah, if you look at what they're charged with doing, and then you look at the political reality of what they are doing, they're not going to have a they're not going to have a good time at all trying to accomplish anything because there's so much conflict. Good morning, caller. Again, I could use a name, please.
Ron from Georgia.
Hey, Ron, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
A familiar voice.
Familiar voice. On my end, too. Thanks for a great show again this week.
Thank you. What's
Listen,
on your mind?
I have a kind of a silly thought here. I was thinking about inflation and everything, mm-hmm. and of course that's on everybody's mind. And I'm in kind of a different situation. I'm living off of a pension from the civil service that has cost COLA and Social Security.
Which has
and
a COLA.
When inflation goes up, both of my pensions go up, and I'm locked in at a 2 7/8 rate on my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 69 years old and have no significant other or anybody, you know, so I'm never going to pay the house off.
Right.
But anyway, I'm just thinking that it's not hurting me as badly as is most people. Am I crazy? I mean,
no, you're not
things
crazy.
Cost more, but I'm going to be making more. I'm yeah. kind of, it's kind of a wash.
Yeah, that's a problem with a lot of pensions. Some of them had an option that wasn't taken. Some never had the option. Social Security is forever indexed, so that helps. But some of them aren't. And some of the old people, I use old because I'm older than you are, some of the old people who are living off of pensions and so on are going to have an extremely bad time, as you just described, whereas others, if your costs are pretty much fixed, then things are going to be just fine. So, yeah.
Well, good. I sleep better at night knowing that.
Yeah, no kidding. You want to take a quick shot at the trivia before I have to answer it?
Let's give it 17%.
17%. Well, thank you, but that's still too high. I can tell everybody right now because we've only got a few seconds left. It dropped from the 34% in 21 to 14%. Totally
wow.
Reflective of the things we've been talking about with inflation and the overall cost of goods. So if you can avoid the problem, you're a fortunate man, and we'll look forward to hearing from you soon. Thanks for the call.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend. Thank
you.
You
too.
All right, we'll be back next week. I'm sure there's going to be more fun and games in the market this week, so we'll see you then. This is the Banway Financial Hour.